You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and listen to the sounds of Twitter messages in the background. No, let's come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
And it's me, Brian. Those Twitter messages you hear in the background are Niall telling us that he cannot get a connection. He's got to download some files. So he may be joining us later if he can manage to get his tech sorted out.
No promises made, but yeah.
No promises made. No, but tonight's episode is Head to Venice. Episode 18 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Golden Wind. Right. First up, got to finish off this fight with Babyface Jr.
When it did that like little preamble at the start, I forgot that fight was happening. Because it was so like over the last time. I was like, oh right, they're still fighting. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because it starts with...
Fuck, he's a food that is Italian, but I can't think of his name.
No, it's the guy who's not being fought in either in this episode. Risotto.
His stand is being fought. It is, yeah.
Risotto Nero is getting computer expert to...
Oh, yeah, sorry, there's two computer fucking hacking things going on, so yes. I'm getting a bit mixed up. Yes, he's stabbing him with nails or something? A little hint as to what he can do,
yes.
I guess.
And is it Gietchio? The guy who's got hair, which looks like a devil fruit or ice cream.
yeah.
He's also heading towards where everything's happening.
He's at the parking lot where there's a lot of people freaking out that all their cars are gone. He sees the exploded motorbike. He knows whose motorbike it is, and he's like, the fuck is going on here? And he reveals his little quirk about sayings that people use.
Yes.
And how it really bugs him.
Yes, yeah. He's another short-fused guy.
It's pretty fun. I gotta say, I do agree with him on the main crux that he gets stuck in, but I think in this one it's translated as taking a leaf out of someone else's book is the phrase he's stuck on.
Yes.
dear. It's a good quirk. I like it.
Yeah, because he was okay with was it turning over stones.
No stone unturned. He was like, yeah, if you're looking for something, it might be under a stone. Better fucking turn it over and have a look. That makes sense. He's totally okay with that. But that other phrase makes no goddamn sense. Why would there be leaves in a book?
Well, yeah, maybe if you met Rohan, then he'd appreciate that idiom a bit better.
Yeah, but then you have to meet the fucker.
And then you might not remember because he's taken a leaf out of your book.
That's true.
So basically the end of the fight with Babyface Jr. is that he's turned various bits of motorcycles into various body parts.
So like he chopped off his hand in the last episode, put it in Babyface.
But it wasn't really his hand. It was a motorcycle part disguised as his hand, which he turned into a prana. Thus,
which turned into a prana,
of...
and it turned back into his hand. Actually, that wasn't my hand. That was my stand's hand. Check it out. I actually put a motorbike inside you, yes. And the motorbike is full of petrol, so even when you try and transform, I'm going to explode you from the inside.
I think that's what happens. Yeah, I think it gets out of the... It didn't break the rule about transforming living things into other living things, because it was actually... He transformed a motorcycle. But at this point, parts of... I feel like it's going to be a case where...
I think he might have chopped off his hand as a distraction when he didn't actually chop off his hand to put inside the guy. He turned the motorbike into his hand, into a piranha.
Yes, I believe so, yes.
And the piranha into a fake hand, and then the hand was a fucking motorbike, I think. I'm like, yeah, it's a little confusing, but it's like, holy shit, this is great, yeah.
Yeah, because he was pulling things, Babyface was pulling things apart to rebuild himself, which is how the petrol ended up inside him.
Yeah.
And then he then turned it back into the body.
And it had a good, like, turn where he's like, okay, I've got you, I punch you in the face, and Babyface, like, reforms around him, so he actually is grabbing his hand, is like, you think that that was my hand? It's like, there was a lot of, like, you're fucking hitting my shadow clone kind of fucking shit. That was just... Brilliant.
The second time in a story where someone's ended up with a motor vehicle inside themselves.
Jeez, yeah, you're right.
And Giotto, that was a flashback, so there's no way Giotto was aware of that to say, I learned how to do that.
I mean, like, unless he read the fucking newspaper and that thing came up in it, yeah.
Then Giacchino turns up and notices everyone looking for their cars. I think that's when he goes into his first rant.
Kicks the shit out of his dashboard a little bit. I think it's kind of wrecked by the end of it.
Yes. So he contacts Malone, but Malone gets killed at the train station.
While he's on the phone, yeah.
Yes, by the remains of...
Giotto had left a snake behind specifically to kill the person who was going to come after them on the train, because obviously they got to the train station first.
Yes,
but right?
specifically, it was parts of his dead stand, I think.
So the stand would go back to him as a snake.
As a snake, yes, because it's the returning to the owner of, like, the shoe returning in a previous part.
So he turned, like, because stands aren't like physical things; they're like mental things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, this was a stand that was made from a stand.
I think he said the stand, didn't he? It would make more sense if it was the motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think it did turn into, like, grey cubes at the end. But the snake turned into grey cubes when your man died from getting bitten in the tongue by his own stand snake. Fuck me, these sentences.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe technically Junior isn't his stand, because it did, obviously, all the wounds didn't reflect back on him.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is.
It's a baby his stand had with a woman who was a jerk.
Yeah, he thought he'd just found another woman who he could create a new baby with. Also, yeah, somehow Bruno's DNA is also involved in making these babies, because it seems to have the DNA.
I think it's so it'll track him or
target,
something.
Target, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't worry about
it's
that.
It's complicated, but he's dead now, so we don't have to worry.
He got bitten by a snake.
That's fine. We don't have to worry about the fucking weird implications of his powers and everything. Yeah, it's fine. He's done.
Meanwhile, much better, much more totally made sense uses of powers is inside of Coco Jumbo. Where...
Oh my god, that was fucking class.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was like, holy shit, what an extreme way to go to keep a secret, and they fucking still figured it out anyway.
Yeah. He gets orders
because
from the boss.
Photoshop, not even stand powers.
Orders from the boss to use Moody Blues to rewind. Use Moody Blues on, like, a section of the wall.
On this chair.
This chair,
I
say, yes.
Because, yeah, your man was standing on the chair so he could shoot himself out of Coco Jumbo.
Yes. 14 hours ago, where they see Perry Colo, the little old man they'd met when handing over Trish to them. He shows them a photograph of Venice's train station.
Like, instantly burns it, but unfortunately they can pause Moody Blues. They go like, okay, yeah, I think I know where that is.
And they're going to retrieve an OA disc.
Is that like a zip drive? Because I remember those.
Yeah, it could be, because that might be like supposed to be like a Amiga, maybe. Or is it an actual thing? It may be an actual thing.
Right, yeah. It might be just a different format. There was a lot of fucking things going back around then.
We'll see it. I'm sure we'll see it, and then we'll go, oh, that's what it's supposed to be. But yeah.
Right.
I Omega zip drive does sound about right.
So he tells them that... Did you?
Yeah.
It was still zip drives when I was going to college, but they were phasing out at that stage anyway, so... But yeah, no, they have to get the zip drive there, which has the further instructions.
Yes.
So that's not even like end fucking goal.
And so people can't question him. Perry Colo shoots himself in the head, which forces him outside of the turtle.
Yeah, he puts his arm up as well, so the force of the gunshot will like blast him out of Coco Jumbo.
Yes.
But and they're all like, they're all screaming at the recording of this, but obviously there's nothing to fucking stop. This happened 14 hours ago. Yeah.
But the Hitman team managed to find the remains
of the photo that he burned and put it back together with computer imaging software. not even a stand power, just like, just fucking photoshopped it back together, sure.
And so Giacchino is on their tail, heading to Venice. And Giorno and Mister are in a car, and they notice the windows begin to get lots of condensation on them.
And they figure it's, as Jonah says, it's like, I did like that there was a bunch of good dialogue between them, with some really good like interplay where he's like, what the hell, Jonah, why are you skidding all over the road? It's like, oh, the roads must be a bit icy because of the windows are condensating and that kind of thing. It's like, don't you even have a license? It's like, no, I'm 15. there was a good bit of banter there, but
yeah,
it's unseasonably cold. Yeah,
yes, there's some good stuff where I think later on Giono says, like, is it like, you're an interesting guy, mister, when like this terrible thing's happening, but mister is still like curious and optimistic even though he's lost a finger and his face is stuck to the window.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to move his face, because while he could start doing shit if he moves his face off, he will tear half his face off.
Yes, yeah. The reason he's getting cold is because Giacchio is on the roof freezing the car, and he's encased in a block of ice himself.
He's frozen his body to the top of the car so they can't shake him, and he's freezing the inside of the car. Like, Giorno opens the window to, you know, change the condensation kind of thing, but obviously that just lets the ice in. Mister's has his face frozen to the window, and notices after he notices his finger stuck to the other window when Jonah was skidding around, and like he keeps commenting on it, like, oh no, now my nasal passages are frozen up. Oh no, now my mouth is frozen up. You know, he just keeps talking through how he can't breathe and that kind of shit, which is great. And Jorno can't stop the car; it's like a speed situation because the brake pedal is frozen.
That's great. Yeah, it's too cold for him to create life forms, because they'll die.
Nothing can survive in the minus 100 degrees centigrade thing. What about those like worms that can live in icebergs? Yeah.
Well,
he's
not. He's only 15. He hasn't read those books yet.
He's got a man. That's interesting stuff.
yeah, they tried shooting him, and the Sex Pistols get trapped in the ice.
That was great, because not only did the bullets get stopped in his armored ice form, but like them getting slowly frozen is like, no!
Is it like two gets frozen and three runs in after it gets frozen as well?
Yeah. And they're just screaming like, no, two and three. I forget which ones are which, but I was just like, oh no, not those guys. I love those guys.
So yeah, Giorno says, all I can do is pick up bullets for you. And throws him some bullets, reloads, fires. And the heat of the bullets is enough that he can turn the bullets.
They turn the bullets into plants to shatter the ice, because ice can break frozen roads. And, you know, like, I've forgotten what that kind of erosion of rocks is called.
It's like freeze thaw.
Yeah. I think that's his logic. But it's, you know, it's fucking JoJo logic.
So that throws him off.
That shakes him loose. I thought it broke off his arms and legs, but he was fine.
Yeah. And they're like, phew. But oh no, he's skating behind them. Basically his stand is like a suit of ice. So it's equipment type stand rather than some sort of humanoid.
Even Mr. shooting him is not enough, because the armor is still as functional around him. He freezes the water vapor coming out the engine of the car and like basically climbs along it, I think. Fucking hell. And Mr. is like, how cold do you have to make that to fucking go? And it's just like the illogic of it. He gets into the boot of the car.
Well, before that though, the Sex Pistols place bullets underneath his skates to make him slip.
Yeah, they can't shoot him. They can't shoot through him, so they are going to cause him to trip, to slip, I guess. But yeah, freezing the condensation allows him to catch up to the car. Oh god. He gets into the car with them, and then what happens? Giorno just drives it off a fucking off the edge into the canal, but it's into the fucking ocean, isn't it?
Well,
I feel like where they are, that's the ocean. I could be wrong.
Yeah, but they're like right. They're right by the island.
True.
Point.
Yeah, and that's our cliffhanger.
Yeah, he like drives it across one to the other, and then bounces it basically one road to the next, and bounces it straight off.
And he's obviously got a plan that he's trying to crash someplace very specific, but
Yeah, because Gold Experience can only, like, put a crack in the visor of this suit he's wearing. Yeah, and that's your cliffhanger. Everyone's about to drown. And next week's episode is White Album, because that's the name of his stand. Or White Ice.
No, it's White Ice. It makes sense, because it's ice powers. dear.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a good episode. There's some really good stuff in the action. Like there's some great use of blacks, I thought, in some of the images, particularly as he's when he's in the ice skating stuff.
Yeah, yeah, some really like kind of like really long, wide movements with the limbs and everything. Some really good action, some really good movements, some really good setups for craziness, which is, you know, right on fucking point for JoJo.
Okay, but, well, apparently his, he can't connect. No, I can't connect. So it's just us two.
Okay.
Bear with us as we try and remember what happened in all these anime shows.
I gotta say though, I've always been with your man in that why do they call Venice rather than Venezia? And people go Paris. I think like people should probably at least name the countries what they call them in the countries. Why the fuck do we call it Germany and not Deutschland? That doesn't make any goddamn fucking sense. it doesn't annoy me as much as him, obviously. But no. I don't go into a frothing rage when I think about it. But I gotta say he's got a good point.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether this is Araki speaking through the character or Araki taking
fucking definitely.
Well, or is it Araki taking the mickey out of somebody he knows?
Yeah, like somebody went on holiday with and it was like a big issue. It was like, alright, I'm making you a crazy stand user now, buddy. it could be either.
Yeah, it definitely feels drawn from real life.
If it's him, if it is his own voice, he is taking the piss out of himself. So, yeah.
Yeah, but you'd expect it to come from Rohan's mouth if it was.
just literally have Rohan say it. That's literally me in the story. Yeah, yeah.
Righty-ho, that is everything from this week's episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We'll be back next week with White Album, as we said. But there's more stuff we watched, so it's time for the podcast. We're in a podcast. Let's go! Boy, is there more stuff. Something turned up this week that we were expecting, but it was still a pleasant surprise.
Mm.
But before we get there, still more messages coming in. Before we get there, it is, normally I don't get this many Twitter messages at this time of night, to make all this noise. I have no idea whether the microphone's even picking it up, so it's maybe, entirely pointless jabber.
You might have to edit them in.
No. First up, Dororo, episode 5, The Story of the Moriko Song, part 1. This, I think, I don't think this is taken directly from anything in the comic. I think you could argue that maybe it's like a very tenuous adaptation of one story, but it doesn't seem to bear too much.
It's a different Tezuka thing, not the Dororo, right?
I don't know about that, but There is a Dororo chapter where he meets a bunch of children living in a temple, and there's a woman who he falls in love with.
But okay, I thought the thing of what she ends up having to do for it. I feel like that's come up in a different one of his stories, yeah, but I can't.
Well, may
place
well
it, no.
be yes, because I mean this title doesn't match any chapters or any previous episodes.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it's. He's having problems because he can't deal with sound hearing for the first time.
He's kind
time.
Of sulking like a child. It's pretty great.
He has trouble fighting a giant chicken.
A giant chicken?
Well, whatever that demon bird is they fight at the start of the episode.
Oh, yeah. It has its name at the end. It looked like a fucking Fearow from Pokemon to me, which I'm guessing Fearow is based on this fucking thing. Like, work its way back. But, yeah.
And the
that's just a regular monster. It's not even a demon or anything.
No,
yeah.
The loot priest has to finish it off.
Mm.
And they're staying with these kids and this woman at this it's like a ruined temple, isn't it?
Yeah, she meets him when he kind of follows the sound of her singing in the river, and she's very accommodating to him being a multiple amputee because she takes care of a bunch of kids who've lost, like, everything, including a bunch of their limbs in war.
Okay, this is definitely quite similar to that story I mentioned. In that sense.
Yeah.
I think there were
I might be thinking of, like, Blackjack or something like that.
I mean, yeah, it's...
It's definitely things that he's done before.
It is, yes. I mean, there's a chapter in the comic called The Face Tumor, which you're like, okay. Calm down with all the medical stuff, Tezuki. You don't have to wedge it in everything.
He is a doctor, Brian.
And so, like, one of the kids and Dororo are planning to nick stuff off of the samurais.
I think that's Dororo's plan. It's like, I'm going to fucking milk these fuckers for everything they're worth, kind of thing. He feels bad taking as much as he is doing from the kids and Yuron, because obviously they're struggling pretty badly. And he's like, can I just not just fucking help out around, you know? Whereas the other kid is like the lead kid is insisting, you got to help your guy. Like, that's like the standard role for children. It's like, oh yeah, you have an adult who you take care of. And obviously that's your one.
Is it Mio, the woman?
I think it is Mio. Yeah.
Yeah. She goes to look for work at the samurai's camp.
Like, you can see that coming a mile away and it still fucking hits, you know?
Yes.
That was rough. Yeah.
And it's Dororo who, sees the samurai all over her when they go to the camp.
Yeah.
Which, okay, yeah.
That was rough.
I'm trying to avoid the massive spoiler, which I don't know when they're going to reveal it. Because they reveal it a lot earlier in the comic, or hinted it a lot earlier in the comic than I was expecting.
Okay. Perhaps I don't know of it, so.
Okay, right. I will not say.
Okay.
But meanwhile, the priest and Hyakkimaru are off fighting the Dungeons & Dragons version of an antlion.
Yeah. It's a pretty crazy antlion demon. There's a sweet spot that they could go. It's off the fucking beaten track, literally, to follow wild animals to get there. So they'd be safe enough if there's these two warring. Actually, it's one of its your man's father's kingdom, isn't it? Yeah.
I can't quite tell whether it was exactly, but that was also because I didn't
Yeah, I think it's.
I know he's worried about a conflict between him and Saito. Is that the other?
Oh, their neighbors or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which they got on well with up until recently. Yes. And that kind of thing. Yeah. Everything going wrong, the more demons are killed.
But I couldn't quite tell whether that was the same conflict which they're talking about.
There's so many fucking wars and monsters going around. Yeah, maybe I'm just assuming that it's related. Mio is initially like working for, inverted commas, one army and decides in the end she's going to do her part if they're helping her out by trying to find a place for them to live peacefully. She's going to work for both armies. And I was like, no, don't. That's a remarkably bad idea. Don't do that. Yeah, because you play both sides. And if one wins over the other kind of thing, you could be seen as a traitor, that kind of way.
Yes.
Working with the enemy, that kind of thing. Was a...
I'm assuming is not going to end well for her.
Oh no, it's fucking, it's doomed. It's super doomed. It's very clear that's how it's going to go, especially like the two things that happen at the end of this are just like, so like, holy shit.
Yes, cause he kills the antlion, and gets his voice back, but in the process appears to have lost the leg that he grew back already.
Yeah, the antlion, I think it's the first leg he grew back. That's bitten off his leg. Which is just like two horrific things happening to human bodies, and it's just like, fucking hell, Shaw. That's taking a lot out of me. it was rough.
It is totally this chapter. It's monk chapter is what this is, because her name's Mio in that as well.
Okay.
So it's totally that, but vastly expanded upon.
Yeah, that seems to be a lot of the way with this show, and obviously they're changing the order of it.
Yeah, because in the comic it's basically him saying, and this is how I first met the monk, and also there was this woman, and she died. But
yeah, okay. I mean, like, I figured, but that's going to happen. But
and I killed everybody who caused her to die.
Well, maybe some catharsis there for the audience.
I think I've already seen that. I think that was because when we record tends to be, yeah, it's the day after the next episode is aired.
So. I'm putting off watching it because I was so like tempted to watch it.
Oh,
straight
I
away.
Watched it. I just couldn't escape the gifs.
Ah, okay. I mean, like, I'm probably going to watch it like tonight anyway, just to catch up on it. But yeah, this was a fucking tough one. Cause I mean, like, not because it was bad or anything, far from it. It's just, it was difficult fucking shit to deal with, basically.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. But that, if you're looking for, it has one great fight in it, which is the fight with the demon bird thing at the start. Particularly once the monk gets involved, his sequence is.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
He's pretty rad. And the end line's suitably terrifying. That's like you say, it's a thing you could adapt to your campaign.
I've never liked those as a monster.
They're terrifying that they exist at all.
Yes.
Even in small form.
But yeah, I mean, I've never known in the D&D terms exactly how to describe how the fight is happening. It's, moving sand is a difficult thing, I find, to visualize.
I suppose if you're doing, like, bits with, like, little figures, you could just be moving them towards the center of the thing,
Yeah, there's always those sort of things, how far away is he? Can I reach him? All that sort of stuff. Yeah. Also, it's not that fun. Any monster which involves a character just being trapped somehow, that's not really very fun for the player. It's like, here's a monster which stops you playing the game.
yeah, that's true. You gotta have something you're able to do.
Anyway, save that for our non-existent RPG podcast, because we've got to talk about Mob Psycho 102, episode 6, Poor Lonely Whitey.
Really just destroying Reagan this episode. Which is good, because he's kind of being a dick.
Are we talking about the right episode? Okay. No, it's not Poor Lonely Whitey. That's next week's episode.
Oh, I've got the wrong fucking thing put in.
Episode 5, Discord Choices. I was going to say, I haven't watched episode 6 yet. I don't remember Reagan being a dick during episode 5.
So have I watched the wrong fucking episode? I'm going to have to check now.
Did you watch an episode which had, like, the cinema-quality psychic battle scenes in?
No! God damn it! I watched the wrong episode.
So you just thought they abandoned the story of him being trapped in that woman, in that teenage girl's head.
Oh! No, I did watch it. It's just, like, it's so far back. But I watched the next week's episode thinking that was this week's one. Fuck me. No, I did watch that one. That one,
you gotta stop
great.
Leaving things to the last minute.
But I watched that one like after we podcasted, and like it feels like so long ago now that I was like, no, I don't fucking. Oh yeah, I forgot that was the resolution to the prior one. Okay, yeah. No, phew. Like I can talk about this.
Okay, so episode 5, Discord Choices. Right, just a quick visual over the other episode. Okay, we're all okay for everything else. Yeah, so he's trapped inside for 6 months inside. At least 6 months on his time is still minutes outside of.
Yeah, I mean, the lads are kind of sitting outside going, like, it's taking him a fucking while, but they're just sitting there in the short amount of time it's happening. It's taking him minutes rather than, you know, seconds to defeat this thing they expected to be easy for him.
Yeah, and it turns out that the girl who they went to save is a total jerk.
Yeah, because the guy keeps coming in as, I think he's generally like a flying creature of some kind.
Yeah.
It frames a crow or like a moth or something like that. And he's saying, he's like, this is totally real. This is how she would be in real life. I'm not exaggerating, how shitty the world can be. I'm showing you exactly how shitty it can be.
Yes. And so Dimple is like, yeah, he can't do it on his own. I'm going in.
Give him some support, yeah.
Yes, because he basically goes in and reminds him of not only all the people who mean things to him, but also how there's people he means things to as well.
Yeah. Weirdly, Dimple being the voice of positivity.
Yeah, even though it's for selfish reasons.
Oh, yeah, entirely. Gotta get this fucking powerful kid back.
Yeah. And he remembers everybody and then jokingly pretends that he doesn't remember who Dimple is.
I really like how Mob's coming out of his shell this season. It's a really good...
Yes.
He's kind of grown as a person. It's great to see. And just the simple things like him taking the piss out of Dimple, like, that was great. And him just constantly getting beat down in this shitty alt universe. I feel like I've read somewhere that this is like, someone's wrote like a long form fanfic of this fucking alt universe. And I was like, this place sucks. What is wrong with you? If you just enjoy misery, I guess it's a playground for that. But, and just Mob trying to be better or deciding to be better in the shitty universe he finds himself stuck in. It's 6 months of that, man.
Yeah.
No friends, no brother. He's the standard anime trope of he's doesn't have parents living with him kind of thing. They're living away or something.
Yeah.
So he's all on his own kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's not entirely fair. Mogami.
Oh, no, your man's stacking the deck against him.
Yes.
Like, these shitty people exist in real life, but I'm going to throw you all the shittiness and you're going to have none of the support structure you have in real life. Yeah. Which it's kind of the thing of it. Like, Mob has earned all this by being a decent guy for his life, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then he realizes that everything around him is evil spirits, is all the evil spirits that Mogami devoured.
It's like a world made of evil spirits.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Or powered by, maybe.
And so, yeah, the second half is just a fucking amazing psychic battle of, like...
Like, the world folding in on itself, so it instead of it just being, like, this... Because it changes... I love the way it changes to, like, letterbox format, so it's, like, a different thing, and obviously the palette just goes fucking washed out of shit. But the second half, where, like, the world kind of folds in around him, so it's, like, something he's trapped... More visually trapped within, that kind of idea, but...
And
I'm just blowing the shit out of everything.
I'd have to go through. I'm sure there's like visual cues of like other famous psychic anime and probably in there as well. Because I feel like there's bit of Akira too, because he's obviously in his t-shirt here, and so there's a degree of Tetsuo in some of the images. But I think there might be some Harmageddon in there as well. Or Gendra.
Man, it's got to be someone who's cataloged
Gendra,
like,
Wars,
all the different things.
Also called, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's so great, and it's so, like, it would be good anyway, just like sweet fucking psychic battle, you know, excellent. But after like the misery and drudgery of it, it's such a like a triumphant release. It feels so good, because it feels really kind of earned for him and everything as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the way the girl tries to, like, deadpan that, yes, I'm that terrible normally, and then sort of breaks down in tears and apologizes like a few steps away.
Yeah. When he gets out and exercises your man, and the girl is like, yeah, I would be the kind who would have be the new girl in school and picked on you because you're the lowest in the pecking order.
Yes.
And then she breaks down because she realizes that was shitty. I was forced to be the shittiest version of myself, and I don't want to be that person. And again, it's kind of like the thing of, you can be better, that kind of message as well.
Yeah. And Regan refused to take any payments, but then she's discovered the cult that's forming around Mob.
Quick search of his, I don't know, like an image search of his face. I don't know exactly how she found that, but yeah.
Yeah. And Mob's takeaway from it all is that, he already knew that people can change, but he hadn't realized that he could also change people through what he does.
He is realizing now, obviously, that it's not only people changing him for the better and stuff, but he's making the world better, and he's making people better by existing and interacting with everyone.
Yes. And
like, just really positive messages. Yeah.
Yeah. Mogami Spirit swears they'll meet again, but is then probably put in, is it like a film case?
Yeah, I think it is like a little small pot kind of thing. It was either that or a medication thing. I think it was a film case, though.
Yeah.
Your man's like, thanks for that. That'll come in handy. I assume we'll see him again someday when your man pulls him out.
Yes, I do. I think that is for sure.
So that was a good bit. And they were like, hey, it's that guy.
Because we know from the opening credits that a bunch of those guys who they fought last season are going to be fighting with them this season at some point.
The fucking Dragon Ball turn your enemies into your allies thing.
Yeah, and except...
as if this show couldn't get any better.
The way that happened was that Riga just gave him a good telling off.
dear. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I shall look forward next week to seeing this episode.
Sorry.
Poor lonely Whitey. Oh, yeah, I know.
Oh, no, yes. You're going to see straight away. It's like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, I knew Regan being a jerk was coming, so.
This
always a jerk to a degree, but he's not as much of a jerk as he could be.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they're going for. It's like everyone, a lot of the things seem to be about change and positive change. So I'm guessing that's going to be what they want to talk about with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I look forward to that next week. Okay. So that was episode 5, Discord Choices. Next up is episode 5 of Rinchi Okoda-chan. Don't believe had an episode title again.
No.
This time is directed by Yonitani Yoshitomo, and Okoda-chan is performed by Rumi Shishido. Because handily they're now putting that in the description. I couldn't remember. I think they've maybe have gone back. Maybe it was always there, but it's definitely in all of them now.
Mm.
Even described Akitaro Daiichi as director of Sexy Commando. Good. So this is, and he brings it up in the interview, he alludes to Pop Team Epic.
He says, Pop Team something or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. A certain pop show.
You know what, or something like that. Yeah.
That's probably it.
In that it adapts material which was in the first episode, but he's also shoved in, he basically explains that he's picked up elements from other strips which haven't been adapted and tied.
So the strip with the lizard was obviously in the comic, and we've seen that.
Yes.
The strip with the cockroach, the G roach, I think they call it. That's from the comic. But
yes.
Then the mosquito was his own invention.
Yes.
Based off those prior two
and
ones. Yeah.
Her covering herself in body paint is he remembered that she would have had body paint left
yes.
in the apartment from another strip when she was.
It's continuity related.
Yes. And it's another way of getting away with the sort of nudity you wouldn't be able to get away with otherwise.
Yeah.
She's technically not nude because she's painted her body to make herself look like a superhero to fight
the hardest part was the zipper on the back.
various invaders. But yeah, so it just takes that tiny element of Akitaro Daiichi's episode and expands it into a crazy marker pen action sequence.
Yeah, like drawn in the fucking back of a copy in school kind of thing. But so much better looking, obviously.
Yeah. He reminded me of Bob Godfrey a little bit, like Rhubarb and Henry's Cat and other things.
Yeah.
His marker pen and his... I can't remember. He had like a TV program and like a book in the 70s about like how to teach yourself how to be the do-it-yourself animator kit. I think that's what it was called.
I think what part, like, appeals to that, like, the fact that besides the fact that it looks great, it looks like it was done by someone just furiously scribbling a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. When you look at the credits, it's like most of the things are him.
Yeah. The keyframes. It's like, there's a lot of keyframes there, bro. But it starts off like the premise is she's stuck in her apartment and the place is fucking filthy and it's shite out and she doesn't feel like going out to get food. So she's just looking forward to eating this bun that she has. And then escalation. So first the lizard, that's okay. Just dress up as a superhero with body paint and catch it. Then the G roach.
Yes.
Is that a pun? I'm just not getting or
possibly it's a gangster roach.
Gangster roach. Okay. Where that's not a friend to humanity, so she won't, like, she's trying to kill that, not yes. take it alive.
So she and catches it in a bag of crackers and shoves it in the microwave.
Which is pretty brutal, and she laments only that she was going to enjoy those crackers later, because yes. she's not going to the shop, it's shite out. And that would require her to put clothes on, and I assume have a fucking shower before she does it this rate. And then it's the mosquito, which is the most intense version, because she doesn't yes. want it to bite her. in various places. I think he mentioned it in the interview, like there's like 52 cuts in this or something like that. But there's one long tracking shot of the mosquito. And he says, well, that makes up for it, right? No, the incredibly long tracking mosquito view shot does not make up for it. That makes it more complicated.
But yes, it's a ridiculously physical piece of comedy as the camera just goes all over her body.
It should be lewd, but it's playing it up for laughs. Like where she actually has to grab one of her tits and move it out of the way of the mosquito, that kind of thing.
And then before it can bite her, she knocks over the bowl which was covering the lizard. The lizard leaps to her rescue.
It is a friend to humanity, just like she thought.
Eats the mosquito and leaps out the window. But then she realizes she's trod on the bun she wanted to eat at the start of the episode.
It's pretty fucking perfect, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Just really solid. As a one joke escalation kind of thing, it's great.
Yeah, and the interview is a lot of him basically saying, well, if I'm going to do a short one, I'm going to do all the stuff I can't do when I'm doing a long show.
Yeah, he's like on the verge of laughter the entire thing. He was just like, I'm just going to have the biggest fucking laugh I can get away with. Can't get away with doing that style for long. Can't get away with this, that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the audio, because that's where Pop Team Epic comes up, of like the multi-layered audio that he was doing.
So there's like two sound effect things. Obviously, it's our voice actress, but also himself saying, oh no, it's her saying the Ekota Chan's name over and over again, like the sped up to be the mosquito noise. Oh God. Yeah. Some fun stuff.
Yeah. And, it's definitely worth watching. I'd seen Yonitani at a Tiger and Bunny The Rising Q&A, and he was good value then. Hmm. So I was, I saw he was the director of this one. Also, I like a lot of the stuff he directs. So, and they mentioned, because they previously worked together on Chan.
Okay.
And they mentioned that the last episode of that, and they couldn't believe that was able to be aired on TV either. It's correct. I highly recommend watching Enma-kun, rather, because she was playing Enbi-chan, Enma's big sister, in that he was also naked all the time.
that seems to be like their thing now. If they ever work together, that's going to have to be the theme of the next thing they do.
But due to licensing limitations, the videos are unavailable in your region and my region. But not American regions. So if you can put on an American disguise, you can watch it on Crunchyroll.
Okay.
I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun because it's set in the 70s. So it's made in the 2000s. Because it's
70s. The style of it's very 70s, yeah.
Yeah, but also all the songs are from the 70s as well.
I think I remember you saying that.
Yeah. And the final episode is just, it's quite... You watch it and you go, I can't believe they were allowed to put this on TV.
Did they get in a lot of trouble, or did they get just get away with everything?
I don't think so, because I'm sure they were still late night. Nobody bothered.
I guess that's a good and a bad thing.
Also, it's a bit like this in that it's so escalated and comedic that while you can't believe they got away with it, you can see how they got away with it, because...
Yeah, I mean, like, this one's like a long tracking shot roving over every inch of her body, but it done for in a comedy action sequence.
Yeah.
But that's well directed as well. Like, so yeah.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. It's my favorite thing this week. Cause that style of animation is one of my favorites. Partly because of growing up with Bob Godfrey stuff, but.
Was this the thing you said you watched multiple times, or was that Mob Psycho?
I watched multiple times.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
That Mob Psycho stuff was also, like, it's a tough call, like, which looked better, but yes. I also really like the look of this, yeah.
Next up, it's Karakuri Circus, episode 16, Encounter, in which, first up, you're not my grandson anymore, you're my son. No, grandfather, I'm your grandson, I'm not my father.
All right, I got two questions for you, motherfucker, who is definitely my son and not my grandson. Number one, where is the soapstone? He's like, what? What's a soapstone? Ah, I fucking knew you'd say soapstone. That, motherfucker. That kind of, it just, yeah. It,
yes.
Like, I thought he was going to, I'll ask you a question. Only my grandson could know. It's like, no. He's just really jumping to conclusions.
And I'm not going to ask you the second question until you've drunk my blood and experienced my memories.
Yeah, I did like the guy with the pot, and he's like, oh, the kid's just like, well, what's that? It's like, it's my blood, now drink it. You know, having two guys hold him down. I was like, holy shit. But then the rest of it's just a flashback to, like, it's narrated by the kid, which is kind of a fun, weird way to do it.
Yes.
But yeah, it's the grandfather's whole life. And initially I was like, this seems like very old fashioned if this is supposed to be his life. And then I was like, oh, right. I forgot about this fucking show.
Yeah, so it's a bit weird. They skip some stuff, but nothing. I don't think that's essential.
I don't feel like I missed anything.
No,
yeah.
You didn't really. And it feels like they cheat with the flashbacks but they kind of get around it by having Angelina explain her life to Shoji towards the end of the episode, in which case then you're like, okay, that's how he knows all these things that we're getting flashbacks to,
yeah.
That he wasn't that present for.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, that was just me telling the story.
Yeah, also I guess eventually, yeah, because he drinks the aqua vitae that she's brought with her, so he would eventually get the memories of, I've forgotten again which one's which.
Ah, fuck, yeah, no, me too.
Whichever one of the good alchemists is.
The guy who he was literally working for.
Yes.
Working with, yeah.
That's the one, that's the thing which you think about it too hard and it becomes a little creepy. So, we meet him though at first as an adult.
No, there's a lot of incestuousness here, man. It's kind of weird if you start thinking about it.
Well, yeah, there's other weird stuff in that. Why does she look like,
scene
in the first place? But we meet Shoji in the 19th century, working as a doctor, and I'm trying to remember which order all this happens in.
So, the kid...
Oh, that's playing.
Sorry.
Yeah, carry on.
The grandfather's a kid,
Yeah, he starts as an adult, and then he quickly flashes back to when he was a kid.
Which
is where they've changed it from the comic, because there was a lot more of the kid hanging around with the alchemist, and also some stuff about his big brother, which the big brother is no longer in this story at all. That's fine, because he's
okay,
again.
Right.
Yeah, and
I feel like they could just like gloss over a lot of the working with the alchemist, because
yeah, you just got to get in.
They give enough of the thing of it for you. Yeah,
yeah, you just got to get in the fact that he built that puppet with him,
so he would recognize it later,
and
yeah,
also
yeah.
Give him the name Shirigane. It's like, this is how you spell your name in Japan.
Yeah.
Also, this Chinese alchemist is pretending to be a man from Holland.
Oh, did they specify that? They said he was a foreigner, but I didn't.
Yeah,
I
think it's Holland, but yes.
Well, it would make sense.
I can't remember
if
they specified
in
the
sure.
anime. Maybe they took that out of the anime because it strains credulity a little.
Yeah.
Then we go back to the modern times, and he has to go to the pleasure district to attend to somebody.
Yeah, some like fancy rich dude is having he has a heart condition, I think it is.
Yes.
It's come up before.
Yes.
Which he brings up, obviously.
Yeah, and before, as he goes to go there, so this is the famous pleasure district. And then he meets the most beautiful woman in the pleasure district. I can't remember what pretend name she's going under.
Yeah, I can't remember her pretend name, but like, it's going to get dropped in this episode,
yes.
So it's not so bad.
And also, you know that she's somehow connected because of whose voice again.
Yeah, again, there's that fucking clue that was missing in the one stage where, why did you take it out of that stage? But yes, it is obviously the major clue here. And she like schools him at his own game of doctoring. She looks at the medications like, yeah, he doesn't need that. That's going to do no good in a small dose.
Yeah.
And your man's his patient is very apologetic, and she's like, oh, she's just like that. Let me tell you, one time when my condition came up, I was going to die on a beach, but then she came out of the ocean and helped me then. Yeah. So she's all right.
Then we get some flashback of her being sent away by, she's only been gone a few episodes, I've forgotten her name already. Romy Pack's character.
Oh, yeah, her mother. Fuck. My brain's like, Margaret. And it's like, no, not Marie
Lucille.
Or something, is it?
No, yeah, Lucille.
Lucille. Yeah.
She's sending her away.
With a bottle of...
Yes, because you're immortal. You need to go and find a man for yourself and get away from this terrible business of murdering puppets.
Yeah, I mean, like, she words it a very Lucille kind of way, where it's like, find a guy who you'd want to stick with forever. So you can be immortal together with him, and fuck off. We don't need you doing all this shit. And she's like, but this is everything I've trained for, mother, please. And as is pointing out to later, it's like, she was doing you a kindness. Like, very obviously. But I guess it's the cold way she does it.
Yes, yeah. Then there's a jerk samurai who's beating up one of the other workers in the pleasure district.
Mm.
And he's also set the place on fire, ends up. And so she beats him up with her giant puppet. And then he's like, that's the giant puppet I made with Shirigane.
With Jin or Yin, whichever one we keep forgetting.
Why do you have this puppet? And then she's like, oh. But yeah, this is the thing. So she's attracted to him because she's drunk the aqua vitae, which has got the memory of that guy in it, and so therefore she had technically already met this guy as a
child.
So
there's something about him that I just recognize as intrinsically attractive or something. Yeah, it's weird. It's fucking weird, man. There's something she likes about him, but obviously it stirs different emotions with her. I think before this he answered her question is like, what would you do if you were given an immortal life? I think he's like the only one to answer that question to her satisfaction, essentially.
Yeah.
Because he has a very weird answer for it.
Yeah, I can't really understand. The best sequence in this is when all her clothes burn off. Not because all her clothes
burn
off.
You pervert!
But it is a really good sequence, because she's like stepping out of the clothes
badass,
as they're on fire.
Yeah.
So he's
she's super badass. Yeah.
Yeah. Shedding all the faux Japanese disguise she's wearing. And
her realizing that as he's carrying out a bunch of people out of this fire, and like as she does to get out of here, she's going to have to walk through the fire and totally not die because she has an immortal body. And that's going to make him go, oh, you're some kind of weird super freak. And it's just like, yeah, but are you forgetting that you look gorgeous and you're going to be naked? Like, do you know anything about guys? But yeah, it's like framed as this like super awesome moment for her, which it is really. But she runs off having the puppet like carry her out of the town. Everyone's freaking out. But a giant puppet appearing out of a burning building with a naked woman, I guess that would catch the town's attention.
Yes. So she runs away and hides in a cave where he finds her.
Mm.
They declare their love for each other.
He listens to her whole life story and like hasn't really, while she's been like opening up to him and she really didn't want to, he's drank the water anyway. It's like, yeah, I guess we're stuck together. It's all very romantic. And I was like, why would you show me this? Like when I know kind of roughly how some of the things turn out.
Well, that's because
strange show
explaining. Well, yeah, you'll see.
Yeah.
Next episode. Next episode, I believe, should be where we get introduced to their children.
It's just when it shows me the happy ever after is when I know it's not a happy ever after. Because they're going to...
Yes.
I know where those characters are now to some extent, so I know that doesn't work out.
Yeah. But no, this is pretty much... it's working again. The show's working again.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but it is. Like, this is good. For some reason, the flashback episodes always seem quite good.
And I believe next week, Toshio Furukawa should be showing up to play a fourth character, and then you'll probably be able to pull the pieces together.
Okay. Jeez, I like it with all the clues like they give with the same voice actors. I don't know how you're supposed to put a lot of it together otherwise.
Well, I don't think you were supposed to, no.
Yeah,
but I think even without the voice actor,
for the people who've read it, though.
When you see the character design of if the next character is playing, then it connects a lot of dots.
Right.
It feels like the missing link between a whole bunch of the characters he's been playing so far.
I mean, the show's definitely good again, but I don't know if it's fucking worth it still, you know?
Oh,
worth it to have gotten this far, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I recommend.
I think at least for all this flashback stuff, I think is good, and there's a good deal of it.
Yeah. That should be a bad thing, but like it's some of the best shit.
Well, like I said, I think this is what he decided that the story should have been about in the first place.
Yeah, refocusing where the heart of it is. Yeah, that's fair enough.
The problem is you've got to do the Midnight Circus bit to get to this, and that could have been definitely done better. But maybe they could only get 3 seasons worth of episodes out of their production committee. And so you've got to allocate the resources where you think they're most needed. But yeah, I wouldn't really front load a show with some of the worst episodes. Well, no, the first 3 episodes are good. So, and
they drew me in pretty well. So,
there's people
good
out
job.
There who love it. So,
no, that's fair enough. Just that fucking middle bit, man. That was a chore for me anyway.
Well, it may turn into a chore again after they've done all these flashbacks.
It might do. That's the thing. And now I'm fucking once bitten, twice shy.
Because I think if I remember rightly, a lot of it is someone shows up to fight Masaru. Someone else shows up to fight Masaru.
I mean, like then we get sweet puppet fights, which is another thing that I liked about the show.
You'll be getting a lot of sweet puppet fights after all these flashbacks, that's for sure. You'll be getting some sweet puppet fights in these flashbacks, I believe, as well.
Excellent, excellent.
Well, you got some, got a little bit of it here.
Yeah.
Righty-ho. Next up on the docket is Boogie Pop and Others, Episode 7, versus Imaginator 4.
I'd have to double-check all those numbers, but I think that's right.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, so I had noticed that Yoshiaki Kawajiri had storyboarded the last 3 episodes. Didn't do this one, though. Mm. I mean, this is a weird, I mean, I like it. And this again, it reminded me of Do-Ra-Ra-Ra-Ra. I realize what it reminds me of. Not so much the urban and the magical setting.
Right.
It's characters getting distracted by plots they're not involved in. To the detriment of their own plots. Because that's essentially what happens this episode.
It's basically like real life getting in the way of what should be the laser-focused story because it's fiction, but if it was close to reality, just shit's going to happen.
Yeah, so essentially Spooky E is supposed to be hunted out, whatever I said those initials were last week. And apparently... creating these terminals, drugging people...
Like he's slipping drugs into like various like a restaurant and a bar and shit and like he's experimenting on them for some end.
Yes,
we're not sure.
And he's like is it Aya the other synthetic human, the girl Camille. Is that she thinks she's still wanted by the terror organization, but he's just using. Apparently she's not. She's like discarded.
She's a cast off from it.
Yes, a faulty.
He says, "I'm not even working for them anymore. Yes. I'm doing my own thing."
Yes. Well, I don't know. I think he might still be, but she's not. He's just using her as a tool, the same way he's using all the other terminals.
I thought he said something along the lines of, "I have a plan. Like I'm not doing this plan out of the Toa organization. This is my plan," kind of thing.
No, I don't think that.
Perhaps I'm wrong. Maybe I read it wrong. Maybe he said something like she isn't part of their plan or something like that.
That's what he said.
I might have picked it up wrong. Yeah.
Because otherwise I didn't know why he's hunting those initial things are. Which they haven't explained, right. But I do know what they are.
And, oh, okay.
And if you know what they are, it gives you a clue as to why he might be drugging things. And again, I don't know why he'd be drugging things if he wasn't part of the terror organization. That's the other thing. It feels like that.
Well, he has electrical mind wiping powers, so it feels like drugs is a bit like a step below him. But he's getting regular check-ins from all his mind controlled slaves, I guess. So.
But that's what he's supposed to do. But he's annoyed that Boogie Pop got involved, and he's trying to. It turns out the idea for Masaki to dress up as Boogie Pop
to become Boogie Pop
is actually Spooky E's plan.
He wants to draw. It wants to convince someone that. Is it Masaki? Is the boy that Masaki is Boogie Pop, so that basically make him a target or reduce the belief in Boogie Pop by people? Because if he's found dead, then people are just like, "Oh, Boogie Pop was just some crazy kid in a costume," which I mean, like, is also true, but in a slightly different way.
But then he runs into the idea of this Imaginator existing. And becomes obsessed with finding out who Imaginator is.
Oh, well, who's this motherfucker?
Well, because he knows that that's what Boogie Pop was looking for. Because Boogie Pop's annoyed that in the few episodes ago that
you're not Imaginator. You're some other asshole. I wasn't trying to fight you. Yeah.
And so much of this episode is he's basically copied his brain into the cousin of. The guy who's in league with Imaginator and calling him.
Yeah, I can't think of his fucking name now.
Because we get some of her flashback and it's like, come on, god damn it, Japanese anime cousins, calm yourselves.
Oh, her whole fucking thing was like, oh man, when his fucking dad died, that was really sad, but I'm glad we didn't adopt him into our family because then we could stay cousins. And I was like, jump, stop it, don't be a weird creepo. Dear.
He copies his brain waves into, because he's not a terminal, he says she's a copy.
Yeah, he's not one of his servants, she is a copy of him walking around in her body.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
That's how I read it, because he's complaining that he's boasting that he's managed to reproduce without any genitals.
It seems to be something he's kind of hung up on, based off the way he says it. In her body.
Yeah, because that's around the time when he reveals that, oh yeah, the terror organization don't care about you, so I can bully you just as much as I like.
Yeah, you're working for me kind of thing, not them.
And then he was like, oh, because she was going to try and convince him he wanted him to stop being Boogie Pop, and then he was going to carry on being Boogie Pop, and then he shows up and says, I hear he's carry on being Boogie Pop, that saves me having to tell you to actually tell him to carry on being Boogie Pop.
And yeah, he's like, yeah, good plan. I'm glad you enacted the plan I fucking came up with and haven't told you about yet. Works out for me. Everything's turning up Spooky E. Oh dear. All he's doing is like, she's like, I think their general plan is she's going to get in distress, like annoy drug dealers, and he's going to just wander in there and kick their ass. That's their vague Boogie Pop plan.
Yeah, that was their Boogie Pop plan. Yes, because I think once...
In the hand cape, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, he says terror organization Axis has already abandoned you. So, yeah.
He's okay.
Yeah, it doesn't mention anything about him not working for terror organization.
Yeah, no, I totally misread that. I thought it was both of them weren't working for it. My bad.
I mean, I could be wrong as well, but I didn't get anything myself from that being the case. And that's where it ends with that conversation.
I don't mind being confused by this show because, as you say, like in this episode, the characters are confused by the plot that they're not fucking aware of.
Yes.
So they don't even know what the fuck is going on. So how the fuck would I know?
Yeah, he also gets like a guy running a bar to raise a bunch of guys to hunt down Imaginator.
Yeah, because that future. Guy's friend got brainwashed and he was like, oh, that was weird. And so in the cousin's body, he's in her body paying a guy who doesn't like this, what Imaginator did to his friends, to kick the kid's ass so he can discredit Boogie Pop. I don't understand what the fuck. it's a bit all over the place, but I'm curious. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure whether those people were going to beat up Boogie Pop or whether...
Oh, no, sorry. I mean, beat up your man as Boogie Pop is what I thought it was, to draw out Imaginator or something. Maybe, again, I might be reading into shit that...
Yeah, I think you might be... I'm not sure that was the plan with those guys.
Oh, it's probably like I'm conflating when he, in the cousin's body, met up with Master... and reveal that he knows he's Boogie Pop and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like, I thought that was part of his plan to get him stuck into this in some fucking regard, but who knows?
Yeah, no, he's not planning on getting Boogie. He's just happy that he's going to carry on and he'll end up getting...
Okay.
He'll end up getting killed one way or another. He's just going to let nature take its course on that.
Yeah, like even his sister is kind of aware of that when she sees him coming home with the bruised knuckles and everything.
Yeah. The gang he's raising as the cousin is purely to hunt down Imaginator.
Okay, I thought he was going to go two birds, one stone kind of thing, but alright.
No, because he just wanted him to stop it, that was all. His original plan was break up with him, break his heart, but that was where her terror organization programming wouldn't allow, she's not allowed.
Let anyone hate her, yeah.
Yeah. Huh, yeah. There you go. A lot of, and yeah, there's like a big, big old flashback with the cousin before she gets her. Cause she's like, he's hiding out in a building that her family own. That's where Spooky E is. That's how she accidentally runs into him.
Hmm.
Is it like an abandoned amusement park or something?
Yeah, he's using her family connections to his advantage while he has a copy of himself in her body. Yeah.
But yeah, because she just walks in on him because she's got the master key to this amusement park.
Mm.
A run-down amusement park. But yeah, that's the first part of the second half. And yeah, Imaginator is only really discussed. I like the fact that he knew something was wrong with this guy because he was smiling. He's not the sort of guy to smile.
Yeah, it's like, I turned to him and said, hey, buddy! And he turned around and smiled at me, and the cousin was like, that's not weird. It's like, nah, he's not the smiling kind. It's like, he was brainwashed, man. And yeah, like, he's getting hung up on this Imaginator, which I think has nothing to do, like you said,
nothing to do with
what he's trying to do. But I guess, like, it's like Imaginator's in on his turf or something, the way he sees it. I'm not exactly sure why he's doing all this.
No, I think it's just because it's interesting.
Could be, yeah. It is like a similar kind of mind-wiping power, so maybe he wants to run the only mind-wiping game in town.
Yeah, or he's just supposed to be monitoring stuff for the terror organization, therefore that's something he should be investigating.
Yeah.
And I imagine they probably know that Boogie Pop exists, if not before the previous story, definitely after the previous story. But I'm guessing the last episodes will be the arc where we get more of it, an explanation. They've already got the list of the new characters for the Dawn, the origin story, but that just appears to be the sister of the person who Boogie Pop possesses.
It's not just because of my propensity for lack of knowing names. I think I'm going to have to fucking start making a list of all the fucking characters and all their interrelations to all the other characters. Oh, God.
Yeah, the problem is some of the characters don't even appear on screen. They're just like dads who are authors. Because they mentioned that...
Like, he's an important character. He come up again in this episode, doesn't he?
I don't know. The dad of the cousin is probably important somewhere down the line because he died in mysterious circumstances and they couldn't prove it was poison.
Well, that and, like, her family seems to be rich and have a lot of landowning things, so that's going to come up again. Yeah.
Yeah, because they own the block of apartments where Camille lives as well. So,
he mentions that. Well, that's just convenient for me. Yeah,
now I don't have to hide out at a spooky amusement park. Well, I still am, but my other self, I've copied.
Oh God, yeah. I did like her tonal change as well, though. The actor.
Yeah, that was
she did a really good job.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's definitely a show for people who want to do two different voices.
Yeah, totally.
And we also learned that the guys in Leo Imaginator was also obsessed with snow. So again, it's like, is that a thing Imaginator just said because Imaginator knew it would register with him and make him more susceptible to allying with him?
Or do they both have some sort of snow-based programming fucking built in or some related thing there, yeah. There's something in it, alright, yeah.
Next up, Bono Bono, third season, episode 45, Boss Bear's Regret. So it appears that Boss Bear had not split with his wife. He had just literally left the woods because of his shame.
Boy.
Yeah, his manly shame at losing to Fishing Cat.
That toxic masculinity comes up again in this fucking episode, so that's great.
Yeah, but we learn that he's not the most toxic of the men in the woods.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we knew that.
Yes.
Like leaving your wife and child, whom you both love, because of your own fucking pride, stupid as shit, could be worse. You could be a worse dad than that, fucking how, in this goddamn woods.
You could be Raccoon's dad.
I mean, I did like his observing other parents, mining yes. data on other parents to see if I'm a good parent thing. And the Wolverine thing is like, this is a weird situation. The Raccoon thing is like, you shouldn't beat your children. And it's like, yes, thank you, Boss Bear. You're an idiot, but you're fucking right, like a stop clock.
Yeah.
And
but
the Bono Bono thing is just like, the fuck are they doing?
Yeah,
but that's being a great parent, you idiot. Yes.
His regret is that he's not been around for his son, and he's worried that in his absence, his son now sees Fishing Cat as his dad.
Yeah, and it's related to do with fishing, obviously, when he takes his son fishing. Yes. The kid's kind of grown up without him, and he's gotten quite good at fishing, and he still can't show him all the ways of fishing, and the son's going to Fishing Cat to learn those extra lessons. Oh my god.
Well, it may also be Boss Bear's regret that he's never learned how to swim.
Fishing Cat does it impressively, a thing he couldn't do without even needing to be able to swim.
Because it opens with him trying to teach his son how to swim and him getting typically dragged away by the river.
Let's catch the big fish in the deep part of the river. It's like blub, 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 blub. And just ruined in front of his son. And he tries to impress him by swinging off a branch and lands on his ass. And he feels like he's not manly enough for his kid. Even trying to imitate Fishing Cat's cool sitting pose.
Yes.
Like this'll win the affection of my child. Like, you dumb piece of shit.
And so then he's caught. His son's caught the fish. And he goes, oh, that's why you were with Fishing Cat. He was teaching you how to catch this fish.
And he was catching the fish for his dad because he was like, oh, I'll do it for dad and that'll make him happy. Because obviously he's unhappy for reasons I don't know because I'm a small child.
Yes. Press my paw.
That was so fucking... The thing of it, like, oh, press my paw. It's like, oh, is that better than Fishing Cat's paw? It's like, yeah, it's the best paw, dad. Best paw. And it kind of like fades up to that sunset thing, and it could have ended there in a happy ending, but it just had to fucking do that shitty end, which is so great.
Yeah, so it fades back to Boss Bear in Fishing Cat's cave going, do you want to touch my paw? And Fishing Cat.
Dude's like, no, get out of my house. The fuck is wrong with you? Oh, fucking amazing. Again, show manages to be very funny and surprisingly deep.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Next week it is episode called Big Sissy's Boyfriend. So that character has
son of a bitch
returned.
Is coming back. Oh, fucking. I look forward to being angry at him. It's going to be great.
Pippo. But unless the other sister's also got a boyfriend, in which case it might be done.
I mean, like, that would just double up how fucking great, how great Chipmunk's angst is going to be about the entire situation.
Rightio, then we've got no Star Twinkle Precure, because Niall's not here to talk about it. But we do have Giga Gaino Kitaro, episode 43, Eternal Life, Adoro.
What was the thing in this week of trying to show like the most traumatic shit to me? I don't fucking know.
Well, like, yeah. So
I was waiting for this to turn around and be the happy ending, and it's like, nope.
No, this is essentially about assisted suicide.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy, who's the father of one of Mana's school friends, has accidentally, well, deliberately, turned himself into a yokai.
Well, I don't think that the end result was immortality. The end result was not intended to be turned into an immortal yokai.
Yes. Mm. And so he sent a letter to Kitaro saying, please kill me.
Mm. And the episode opens with Mana's friend, like, looking at the word suicide and, like, seemingly about to step in front of a train before Mana interrupts. So I was like, wait, is she trying to kill herself? But then it kind of turns out, yeah, the dad is the one who wants to die.
Yes, and it turns out the daughter thinks she can keep him alive by bringing people who want to die to him for him to feed off when he turns into
I guess the idea with the train thing wasn't she was going to step in front of the train. She was hoping to find someone who wanted to step in front of a train who she could go, hey, you want to die? My dad will eat you. That was her plan. Not a very good plan, but a very kid plan, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's Kitaro's moral question of what she should do. But I think by the end, Adoro has taken his, I think he didn't.
He's lost anything of his humanity.
No, I think he hasn't.
No.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think he's trying to convince Kitaro that he has, so that Kitaro will go like, well, I can't fucking take the risk that there's nothing left there.
Yes, because the thing.
Nothing worth saving.
The thing repeated all the way through the episode is that he still recognizes his daughter. He won't attack his daughter.
Yeah.
She's still safe. And so in order to convince Kitaro to kill him, he attacks his daughter.
Yeah.
But then the look, because he does it, and then the look he gives Kitaro tells you, oh, no, he hasn't lost control. This is him. Even if Kitaro knows this is Kitaro's out.
Yeah, it's more like a look of, it's less like a look of, haha, see what I'm doing, I'm eating my own daughter's blood. It's more like, please,
yes.
I'm willing to go this fucking far, so just do it, kind of thing. It's a very pleading look.
Yeah, I mean, beyond that, it's a slight story, but it's the way it's told.
There's not much in it, but the way it's told, like you said, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And of course, incredibly bleak. Although I think it was too bleak, but it was too built up from people commenting on it before I went into it that it was not as bleak as other people had found it when I got to it.
So wait, it was built up to be not as bleak?
No, it was built up to be...
And then it was more bleak than you expected?
No, the other way around. Everyone was saying how bleak it was, and then when I got to it, I was like, okay, yeah, well, I mean...
I fucking watched Aurora, man. That was fairly rough.
Yes.
Dear. It's only going to get worse, I know.
Also, I mean... After watching Tensai Bakuban last year, his dying words being, this is how it should be, maybe don't hold as much weight as they might otherwise.
I know. Anytime someone says that now, I can't help but hear that fucking catchphrase. That it's such a common term of phrase. How fucking show ruined it for me. dear.
Yeah, because it ends with the daughter telling Kitaro that she'll never forgive him.
She doesn't, like, stop him or anything. It's just
But that's the sort of behaviour which turns you into a yokai.
Yeah, yeah. The kind of bitterness and everything.
Next week, it's all about superhero, by the looks of things. Or some such.
Yeah. Like, complete tonal shift, but alright. Maybe necessary.
Well, yeah, sometimes though the trailers can be deceiving as to what the tone is going to be.
Mm. Like this one, like the one thing in this episode that I found out is like it kept trying to couch it in science, where it's like I've met the immortal like a molecule, but no one could replicate my invention. So he injected it himself and recorded the process to prove it to everyone. It was kind of strange. I was like, why did you need to do this in like a science way? Surely you could have given him a reason to wish immortality, like basically like a monkey paw type situation. But it is like a science monkey paw. Is the
yeah,
way
I think I've got this in one of the compilations, but I can't remember what differences there are.
Okay.
But by the looks of things on the... I don't know whether it has... It may still have that scientific thing to it, because there's definitely ones where it leads into the sci-fi.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Because there's one where it weirdly has like a pre... So I think there's one where Kitaro gets turned into a Godzilla, and they build a Mecha Godzilla to fight him. But this is before Mechagodzilla has been a thing in Godzilla.
Also, they pre-em Mechagodzilla. That's amazing.
Yeah. Right. Finally, though, a returning champion to the podcast for the first of three extra episodes to be delivered monthly. It's Double Decker Episode X1. The Daily Lives of the Seven Detectives.
Based on the premise, yeah, I really was hoping it was going to be like them just bullshitting around, and it was, so fantastic.
Yeah, this falls somewhere early. It's before Valerie is shown up to be the barmaid.
Yeah, obviously that you can pace it that way. I think it says at the start, like, this is when he's been working for like a month or so in the detective agency. And based off the clips of prior episodes, you could probably like literally place it between X and X, kind of.
Yeah, it's probably between which episode five and it'd be between five and six. So they mentioned the prison, don't they?
Well, that would be like a month of the show being on, yeah, at least.
Because
so,
Aykroyd's
yeah,
thriller
that fits.
Killer is the so it'd be between around episode five, I guess, before episode six, because Valerie shows up at the end of episode six.
Yeah. And obviously he hasn't written the job description until the end of this episode.
Yeah, but again, you couldn't stick this in between there because a lot of the jokes require you having already seen the scenes.
Yeah.
To get it at this point.
Like, you could put it in between on a rewatch, but,
yes, but not
that,
for
yeah.
a first time viewing. Yeah.
Sure.
So it's a game of two halves. The first half is all the women explaining how they got hired.
All their a ladies' night out and an origin story, so
yes.
That's pretty fun.
Except we don't get
everyone's origin story.
No, because Dina's origin story is I don't know, Black Widows. It's something akin to that.
It's played up for the drama. Like I was wondering, like, is there going to be like any truth to this? But based off this show, I imagine it's just completely bullshit. Yeah.
Yes.
I like the benignness of some people's origin stories, like Rookie's one, where it's just like, yeah, I was saved by a cop, and I just thought she was super cool. everyone's just like, really? That's kind of lame. Also, it makes Travis out to be so much worse, and I love him for it. I love how shit he is as a character. He's fantastic.
Yes, he just hires people because they're cute girls, and any men he hires is because he thinks they'll have no luck with women.
Like, they have to have no luck with women, and what's the second condition under which he hires men? He has a second one, but it, like, matters way less than the no luck with women, and I've surrounded myself with beautiful women thing.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's like the one who we've never seen, who I assume was Dina's previous partner, was apparently married. And then the punchline, the final punchline of the entire episode, is it turns out he hired Kirill thinking he was a cute girl.
Yeah, he just saw the picture and was like, wowee!
And because Doug recommended approval. Him, but the fact
the cute girl thing was the immediate hire.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, these two conditions for men, but you just need to be a cute girl for him to hire you other than that. What a piece of shit.
Well, except, I don't know. I don't know where things...
I mean, like everything is working. Like, he is surprisingly competent people. He just hired you one off the street with no prior experience to be the not the handler. What's her... Communications is her job, isn't it?
Yes,
officially?
It is. Communications, yeah.
And she's very good at it. So, it's kind of like, is he just really fucking lucky with who he hires?
Well, no, it's her is the one which makes it thinks that it isn't because he wants to hit on them. because of her turning him down. It seems to be the reason why he hired her.
But he was like putting cute outfits in front of her, deciding what her uniform would be.
Oh no, I think he's a creep, but not in he wants to hit on them sort of way.
He just wants a lot of beautiful ladies, a beautiful angels around the fucking office.
That is it, yes.
Feel good about himself. Oh, God. Yeah, no, whatever it is, it's creepy. but fucking ulterior motives I could not figure out for the life of me.
that's basically the first half. But then there's a bit where, in the first half, where we see Travis sneeze because they're talking about him, and then Derek and Doug sneeze.
As soon as Travis says in his cutaway where it's like, ah, someone must be talking about me, and then obviously it's the two boys going sneezing when Travis is thinking of them.
But no, it's we rewind back to the start of the first half, where Doug and Kieran are on a stakeout. They've been sent home because they're on a stakeout where nothing was happening.
It's basically like the same story, but from Doug's perspective. Yeah, or
from Kieran's
perspective. But it shows what Doug was doing, like, because he shows up in the middle of the girl scene and then he disappears partway through, kind of thing. It's like, what the fuck is he doing? And there's obviously something going on with him and Derek with the little package he had.
Yes. But they run into Mark, another former partner of Doug's.
Who Kirill is fucking, like, he's so like, he wants Doug to ask him out drinking. He's specific with Derek over, like, talking about this, where it's like, the old guy, the old hand has to ask the rookie out for a drink in his favorite bar, kind of thing, because it shows that he respects him, man. I can't just ask him out for a fucking drink. But he gets on so well with his other partner. He's like, yeah, come on, let's go to the pub. That girl is livid. It's great.
He discovers that this guy, Mark, is still a constable.
And he's like, but that's the same rank as me.
Yeah, so he goes, yes, I'm very bad at being a policeman.
Based off what we hear, it's like, yeah, he sounds awful.
Yes, because, yeah, it turns out at the end that he has to get off anyway because he's under house arrest for taking his uniform back so he can have sex with his girlfriend in it.
Yeah, so he could play some fucking kinky roleplay. And one of the stories, his old stories with Doug is like, remember that time I fucking crashed the car into the lake? You were more concerned about the car than me. It's like, yes, that's police property. that's remarkably poor behavior, dude. Oh, dear. But Doug again proves that he's a piece of shit in this episode, and everyone says it as well, where he like leaves the guys in the bar to go just meet up with Derek. And I was like, I'll be back in 5. It's grand. And then when the girls show up with free booze, he's like, oh, brilliant, I'm sticking around. Which is why he was there and why he left, essentially.
A bottle of champagne, though. That Travis has bought for Sophie's 5-year-old brother.
Cause he's a classy dude. He's like, I've remembered his birthday, but I haven't remembered that he's 5 years old and champagne is not an appropriate gift.
Yeah.
But Sophie's happy enough to share with the other ladies. Yeah.
Which it was what convinced him to go to Derek's, because they didn't want to go to Derek's anyway, because all of his food comes out of cans.
We'll go there to drink. Yeah. And he's like, but you can't bring fucking food and drink with you. And he's like, come on.
Do we even find out what that thing was that Doug kept on forgetting?
No, I wonder if that's going to go up in one of the other X episodes. Like, it's going to be the MacGuffin of these fucking trilogy.
He goes to Derek's because he forgot it. Has a word with Derek, leaves, and leaves it behind.
He's distracted by booze, and Derek has to run after him to give it back to him, yeah. Oh, God. So it's not only that he forgot it the first time that we saw in part one, it's that he forgot it fucking twice. God damn it, Doug.
And there's a bit where he's asking Doug, why did you recommend me? And he's like, flashes back immediately. The first thing is him completely naked.
Yeah, it's like the suggestion is, you dick, but, which is like, they're so fucking baiting people on this, man. The way Carol's acting like a jealous new boyfriend to all the ex-boyfriends, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they do lean onto it a little heavier than they did in the series in this episode.
So fucking hard. Like, were you aware of the homoeroticism the first time around? Okay, how about this time? How about this extra episode? Can you see it now? It's great. Yeah, the thing of Doug being a jerk, of leaving his new partner and his ex-partner, two people who have nothing in common, in a pub together alone, that they start hitting it off and getting on, like, just a shit-talking Doug, essentially.
Yeah,
what a fucking asshole.
Where's her and him and Dina?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. Because, yeah, they force Dina to give her origin, and then she just tells a lie. So we still don't know what her origin is at all.
Yeah.
We don't get robot's origin either. We just know that she's a robot.
I presume she was a robot med for police jurisdiction, but maybe it's more interesting than that.
Yes, yeah.
Because it did suggest that your own boxer took her in. I presumably she was just shut down in the fucking lab.
Yes, maybe she was built for crime.
At that point. Yeah. Like a Robocop situation. But it's like, no, you're going to live with me and we're going to be girlfriends.
Yeah.
They still haven't made that clear in the show besides in the opening and closing.
We learned that she was a professional boxer and a cop.
At the same time. Yeah. It's complicated. It's not just a nickname. She was literally a boxer. Yeah. And him just creeping on her, where it was kind of ruining her game. That's great.
Yeah, she was being distracted because she thought someone was staring at her all the time.
And again, it seems like he was just trying to woo her, but then hired her for his double detective organization.
I think he was wooing her for the detective organization, seems to be the thing.
But was he, though? That's the thing. You don't know if he's competent
that
or lucky.
That is true, yes. Because it is weird, because he's very... In that very first episode, it's like there's lots of flags of him being gay in terms of some of his behaviour. But now you're not sure because he thought Kirill was a woman.
I've no telling exactly what his deal is, but he's being weird.
Except an idiot. Thing. We know he's an idiot because the writer has
explained. Oh, yeah, he's absolutely stupid. He's as stupid as Kirill, which is very... Yeah.
Except we learned that Kirill is also super intelligent, so maybe...
He's book smart.
Yes.
Mm. So maybe Travis isn't book smart or street smart, he's just lucky as shit.
He may be people smart.
You could have it.
I think that is what he is.
That would make sense. He's accidentally people smart. He accidentally hires people who are perfect for the job, but out for stupid reasons.
Yeah, but also he's good at managing the people and the people above him, I think is the thing. Even though it's
short in this episode where he's saying like, yeah, in this episode, he shows he does have a good handle on him where he's like, I'm going to say you guys have the day off because, you know, there's nothing left to do. And then I'm going to turn around right now and you're already going to be gone. And he does. And he's like, I knew it. So he knows exactly what the fuck they think of him. Oh, dear. It's a fucking great show, man. And there was a lot of like off model faces in this, but I still like enjoyed all the banter. So I'm not going to complain.
Righty-ho, that is it. I'm yawning because I did a lot of driving in the past 2 days. It ends this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week for White Album. Or White Ice. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcast at secretofthesaladmadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye and apologises for all the Twitter noises.
Bye.